The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by TechTown Detroit, Detroit's entrepreneurship hub. TechTown Detroit is a business incubator and accelerator, helping tech startups and local businesses launch and grow. TechTown supports businesses with co-working, office, meeting, and event space. They also connect entrepreneurs to resources and learning and networking events in Detroit. TechTown Detroit, Detroit's entrepreneurship hub. Hey everybody, welcome to the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Glad to have you with me today. Coming up on today's program, there are a lot of questions around legalized marijuana in the state of Michigan. What's going on in the city of Detroit? What is happening to people who are dealing with marijuana convictions in the past, expungement, all that kind of stuff? And also, what's the future of the industry look like? Well, there are a lot of legal questions, so I thought I'd bring in Matt Abel, who is the lead counselor at Cannabis Council, for a conversation about what is happening with the legalized marijuana industry in the state. Stick around for the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Samaritas, the state's largest private foster care and adoption agency. However, Samaritas also provides a number of other services around the state. They are one of the largest refugee resettlement agencies in Michigan. They serve homeless families, persons with disabilities, abused and trafficked women. They also provide market rate and affordable housing for seniors and HUD housing for families, and also have skilled nursing, memory care, and rehab communities in Grand Rapids, Cadillac, and Saginaw. Samaritas, we thank them for their support here at Deadline Detroit. Hey, Craig here. Thanks for checking out the show on this day. Certainly do appreciate it. Hey, 25,000 downloads of this program. Not bad. We appreciate it very much. Thanks to everybody who's been checking it out, sharing it, all that good stuff. Feel free. You can do the same thing. If you like what you hear on this program, let others know that we are out here doing this every single day. Well, not every day, but close. I do appreciate it. Anyway, coming up on today's program, I had a chance to sit down with Matt Abel the other day. Matt, of course, is the founder and lead counsel at Cannabis Council. He's been dealing with marijuana issues for the bulk of his career. Obviously, the profession is changing quite a bit as pot is now legal in the state of Michigan, but there are still some delays when it comes to recreational marijuana sales in the city of Detroit. There are still a lot of questions about what people can and cannot do in regards to this. And so we thought we would ask a whole lot of questions about what is going on in the industry and how it's going to change. Matt came in on Friday to sit down with us for the week that was, and I decided to have him stick around for a little bit for a wide-ranging conversation on a whole host of different things in relation to legalized marijuana. So here's that conversation with Matt Abel. Matt, welcome to the Craig Folly Show. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of confusion out there about what is happening when it comes to recreational marijuana here in the state. It's basically been on the books for a while now,
right?
Yet there's still a whole lot of places where people don't have access to it. There's only a few dispensaries that have opened up at this point in time. Different cities seem to be wrestling with different ordinances. From your perspective, as somebody who has represented people in this industry for a long time, how confusing is it right there, right now, not just for consumers, but also for the people who are trying to actually make this a business?
It's pretty confusing. I spend pretty much full time on this, and still there are things I learn on a daily basis. And it's interesting as the process is working through the agency and through the courts and through the city councils. There's just a whole lot of moving parts here.
Well, and every city has the ability to basically either opt out or create their own ordinance, correct?
Yes.
And so the patchwork of regulations is going to be, you could have dozens and dozens of different rules.
Yes. Michigan's really interesting because, for example, in California, there are less than 600 municipalities. Michigan has 1,773 municipalities. So that is a lot of township boards, city councils, village commissions, all of whom can weigh in on this recreational marijuana law and do what they want with it for within boundaries.
Well, and I mean, I understand that communities want to control this, but, you know, do you see the reaction to this so far as being based in, is it rational, or is it sort of like, well, we better figure something out quickly because it could overrun us if we're not careful?
There is a lot of that. I mean, typically the city administrations still are controlled by old white guys, if you'll pardon me. But the people in power tend to be the most conservative generally. And so the people voted two-thirds in favor of legalization. But you don't see that same split on city councils where there are two-thirds in favor of legalization. It tends to be the reverse. So sometimes we have to drag the cities along kicking and screaming. That's one of the reasons why in the proposal we wrote the right for anyone, any citizen of a municipality, to collect signatures and put it up for a vote. And that might happen in Detroit, but we're hoping that the city council will get around to doing something on this soon.
Well, and there's a lot of stuff going on in Detroit as to why this is delayed. And as we discussed on Friday's program, one of the things is trying to find a way that people in the city can participate in the industry, especially if they've got some sort of criminal background with marijuana. So many people disproportionately impacted by marijuana arrests in the city compared to the suburbs.
True.
Over the years.
Yes, but that is one of the differences between the Medical Marijuana Facilities Licensing Act, the MMFLA, which regulates medical dispensaries, if you will, and MRTMA, the Michigan Regulation and Taxation of Marijuana Act, which regulates retail stores for adult recreational use. In order to get into a medical store, an entity is prohibited if any of the members have a felony drug conviction or other types of convictions within a certain period of time. Under the recreational law, it's much less restrictive in that the only thing that bars someone from being a member of a business is having a conviction for selling marijuana to minors. As long as someone's not been convicted of selling to minors, they're eligible to be in this business.
Okay. Oh, that's something that people need to know.
Yeah, absolutely. The problem is, without a medical license first, the only licenses available until the end of 2021 are licenses for a 100 plant cultivation facility or this new entity called a micro business, which is 150 plants that are grown and sold at that location.
Which not a lot of people can do.
The growing part?
Yeah.
Well, it takes some skill, right? It is a weed, but it's sensitive, especially if you're growing indoors in hydroponics where a little change in the pH can kill a whole crop very quickly. So soil is more forgiving, as they say, but it takes more work to do that, to grow in soil.
Now, I should remind folks, my guest is Matt Abel of Cannabis Council, joining us here on the Craig Folly Show. There's also some confusion about what kind of trouble exists out there for people if they indeed are doing this, because police are going to be on the lookout for people who they suspect of driving while high. You know they're going to be doing this. There's an important court ruling that came up on that just the other day, as a matter of fact, in the Court of Appeals, which we'll get to.
Right.
But with this now being legal, are people under a false impression that they can pretty much do whatever they want, or are people still getting in trouble for weed offenses?
Well, it's always been illegal to drive while intoxicated,
yes.
And I don't think people expect that it's just legal to drive when you're high on marijuana. So I think that concern is overblown. I mean, certainly there is some concern, and they're still developing proper field sobriety tests for that, if you will. So there's a lot to go there. In my opinion, the driving issue can well be solved by body cameras and dash cams that can show how a suspect is behaving, how they're walking and talking, how they're interacting. And from that, you can pretty well tell if someone's intoxicated, if the technology is working properly.
Sure.
So I don't think that's going to be a terrible hurdle or so confused.
But interestingly enough, though, the appeals court ruled the other day that the police have to have more evidence than just simply the scent of marijuana to justify a warrantless vehicle search.
Right.
And that seems to be something that's kind of a big deal.
Well, yeah. I mean, that case kind of came that way through the back door, if you will, in that that case was where someone, when asked, when the police officer indicates he could smell marijuana and he asked the people if they had any marijuana, they lied and said they didn't. And he said, well, that's bullshit. You know, I know it's here. I can smell it. And so the deception was what gave the police the right to search in that case, short of the deception. So if you have weed, just tell the cops, you know, if they ask.
Yes.
I don't ever suggest volunteering any information. Or don't tell them, but certainly don't lie to them. I always suggest that people answer a question with a question like, do you have any weed? And the answer is, well, would that be illegal?
Really?
Something like that.
Why does that make a difference?
Well, it's never, first of all, it's a crime to lie to law enforcement, but it's not a crime to ask them a question or to refuse to answer a question unless it's impeding an emergency search or something like that, some public safety exception.
Okay. I never really thought about it that way. But the question I was getting into, though, is like, again, you know, there's probably going to be less of an emphasis on marijuana, although Police Chief James Craig here in Detroit has hinted that a lot of the violence that we're seeing right now is from the still the illegal aspects of the marijuana trade in the city right now. There's still going to be a big black market. And I'm wondering, you know, what do we when it comes to criminal behavior around marijuana, is this something that the police are just going to be looking the other way on? Or is there still going to be some people that are dealing with some serious legal problems?
Well, the penalties are certainly massively reduced, and there still will be, I'm sure, some high-grade smuggling and organized criminal enterprises, if you will. But that's always gone on, and I don't see an uptick in that necessarily. But what we do is we do see a reduction in the number of people being arrested for simple marijuana possession, and that's a good thing. Yes, crime is always going to continue to occur, and especially without the retail stores being open, people are finding more creative ways to do gifting and other gray areas around the edges, if you will. But as we begin to have more availability of recreational marijuana for adults, we should see a reduction in crime. And I think to some extent the headlines of Chief Craig's statement that legalized marijuana is bringing violence, he didn't mean it's because of the legalized marijuana, really. If you go deeper into his comments, he was saying it's because it's illegal. It's because of prohibition that we're still seeing the crime. And if you want the criminal activity to go away, then make it available to the public. If it's not available, people are going to go to the gray market like they have been for years, or as we're now calling it, the informal market.
Matt Abel, my guest right now of Cannabis Council, sort of doing a lay of the land when it comes to the, you know, what's going on with both recreational, medical, marijuana, illegal. There's still a lot of illegal parts about this. Federal government still says, still schedules it as a, or still classifies it as a Schedule One drug. The Obama administration made it clear that they weren't necessarily going to do much about that. The Justice Department under President Trump has been a little bit less clear on whether or not they are going to go after this stuff. But there was a guy in Grand Rapids just about a month ago, end of January, was sentenced to 16 years in federal prison for some violations of federal law when it comes to pot.
Well, Danny Trevino had been operating some places in Lansing and
in Grand Rapids, I believe,
beat
too.
Beat the criminal charges over and over, the state charges, to the point where I think it was former Attorney General Bill Schuette who turned him over to the feds and suggested that the federal government prosecute him because they couldn't get him for any violation of state law. He's just you know, that's a bad example of overreach of the criminal law. Maybe he was operating in the gray area, but did we really need to send him to federal prison for more than a decade? I don't think so at all.
Well, yeah, and apparently he was raided 16 times between the years of 2010 and 2016 when it was not legal to be doing any of this sort of stuff.
But never convicted on any of those.
Exactly. So I'm wondering if that's something that you are worried about for your clients. Is there a possibility that, you know, you've got people that you are still dealing with on criminal issues and things like that when it comes to marijuana? The federal government sort of overreaching like that or getting involved in cases where the state would more or less just leave people alone?
Well, that was a gray area case, if you will, where the people who are licensed now, the entities which are licensed by LARA under the state of Michigan, are not operating in a gray area. They're operating in a white area, if you will, or a clear area, except for the federal government. But up till recently, there has been a rider along with the federal budget saying the Justice Department cannot use federal money to prosecute people who are otherwise in full compliance with state law. Now, in this last budget that Trump just delivered to Congress, he's removed that provision. I expect that Congress will put it back in there, but it just shows the Trump administration's hostility to cannabis or their kowtowing to whoever their benefactors are who don't want this, and maybe that's the alcohol and tobacco companies.
Well, that's been one of the concerns. You mentioned the alcohol and tobacco companies. That's been one of the concerns is that it's going to be big corporate interests that sort of take over this industry in states like Michigan and Colorado and Oregon and California, as opposed to being for small business people and people are looking to do this. Do you get a sense that we're going to start seeing, say, the Hiram Walkers of the world and the R.J. Reynolds getting into the pot business?
Well, there will be. There have been rumors for years that the tobacco companies have been preparing marketing and advertising and for cannabis. And some of the tobacco companies and Constellation Brands and the alcohol biz have investments into marijuana. I don't know so much that they're doing it because, a couple of reasons. One, they're going to lose market share because as marijuana use increases, alcohol use decreases, which I think is a good thing. But in addition to that, we're seeing them wanting to replace that market share with a marijuana market share. So there's a lot of consolidation in the industry. I expect that in the next 5 years, most of these entities which are being licensed currently will probably be acquired at least twice in the next 5 or 10 years. So we're going to see rapid transition where the stores that start up may be mom and pops, but many of them flip them to larger entities almost immediately. So that's a concern as well.
Well, and you may or may, and we're sort of going all over the place here because there's a lot of different things that are going on around the country in regards to this. There was a lawsuit that was filed against the Kansas State Police because so many people are going to Colorado and they've been targeting. They were basically the Justice Department said you are illegally targeting people from out of state. 93% of the people they pulled over on the freeways in Kansas were coming out of Colorado, and they were targeting those people to see if they had marijuana. It amounted to some sort of Fourth Amendment violations here.
Have you ever been to Kansas? You might want weed, too.
I have been to Kansas before.
No,
I usually go to Nebraska, one state north, when I'm going out there. But it's interesting. Somebody now asked the Ohio State Police how they're going to be dealing with it. They say they don't have any plans to increase patrols along the border for people going to Michigan to buy this sort of
stuff. They've already increased the patrols
the border. I mean, what advice would you have for people that are maybe thinking about doing that?
Don't violate the law. As a lawyer, that's my first advice.
As soon as you cross
advice.
That line into Ohio, though.
Well, don't speed. Make sure your taillights work. Don't violate any traffic laws. And don't take cannabis out of state. That's just asking for trouble. At some point, that's going to have to shake out, but I think we're several years away from that happening. What's really interesting is with Michigan and Illinois both having legal recreational cannabis, that people are driving through Indiana, and Indiana's not friendly at all, and so that's kind of a no man's land there.
Well, Indiana kind of is that way anyway. And plus, we've always thought that Ohio cops targeted people with Michigan plates anyway, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what we'd like to think. Real quick, one last thing that I wanted to get to. A new rule that was signed into law yesterday. Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist was acting governor for the day yesterday. Pot retailers have to have a warning to pregnant women on the containers of the product now.
Yes.
Which I have no problem with that.
Right. Warnings are good.
They are. And then, of course, there's now this informational pamphlet standards that have to have like the safety warnings and stuff like that on there.
Well, it'd be nice if the state would put out something more accurate than the propaganda that they were putting out last month.
That's what I wonder. How do we know that what they're saying is accurate?
Well, we haven't seen any drafts of that yet, but I think if it's not accurate, we'll get a lot of pushback, or they will get a lot of pushback. So it has yet to be seen. But clearly, people need to start low, go slow, don't drive, and, you know, be in a safe space.
Well, one last question for you, Matt. What happens to a practice like yours now that all this is changing? I mean, you know, when you got started, this was a problem. People needed your guidance. People were getting in trouble all over the place. That's going to decrease quite a bit. We hope that we don't see the same sort of trafficking in terms of, people getting arrested for marijuana offenses.
Right. I've been trying to work myself out of a job for a long time.
Exactly. So what happens? How do you transition this to make sure that you're still on top of what's going on, but you're providing the necessary services at this point in time?
Well, thanks for asking that, Craig. Our firm, Cannabis Council, has 5 lawyers, and 10 years ago, it was mostly criminal defense work. These days, it mostly is licensing work, and we foresee this will continue. Michigan's just really begun the licensing process. We expect that'll be 5 or 10 years until that's built out. And then I'm hoping to go live on a beach somewhere, but the younger lawyers, I expect, will have plenty of work dealing with mergers and acquisitions in the industry and then litigation over contracts and mergers and acquisitions in the industry. There will be a lot of licensing issues. We're seeing more intellectual property, patent and trademark work. And so the law just transitions. And when marijuana is completely legal, we'll become cocaine counsel.
Well, and how do you feel
about it? Just a joke, folks.
How do you feel about that, though? I mean, obviously, seeing it transform from the defense work to now something where you're actually working within the legal framework and it's completely different work, obviously.
Yeah, it's fabulous. I was speaking with the director of the department last week, and, that wouldn't have happened if it was just criminal defense. I'd be speaking with, the attorney general or something. And while she's fine, I don't want to argue criminal cases. I like being able to sit in my office in jeans and T-shirts rather than put on a suit and tie and go to court and argue with judges and prosecutors. So it's a lot better world for me. And it was never about getting wealthy. To me, it's always been about changing the law. And so I can feel good that we've come a long way.
I've also noticed that there's a whole lot of the big firms here in town that are starting little cannabis divisions within them.
Right.
And so there's going to be a lot of competition, obviously, that maybe didn't exist before.
Yeah, the State Bar of Michigan now has a marijuana law section. I am the chair this year, and there are over 500 attorney State Bar of Michigan members in the marijuana law section, but they range from criminal defense lawyers, real estate, intellectual property, licensing, administrative work, and it goes on and on. Healthcare law, almost any area of law intersects with marijuana law one way or another, sooner or later.
Well, and in your role with Normal, though, how is that going to change as well? Because obviously the legalization thing was the big push that Normal was after for a long time. Decriminalization then gave way to legalization.
Right.
Not just for medical, but what do you need to make sure happens now as an organization? Is it just making sure these communities don't go off the deep end when it comes to their ordinances?
Well, I think we've been fairly successful in Michigan. The things on our agenda include expungement.
Fairly successful. Well, it's the ultimate
goal.
We're
not done. We need to get the legislature to adopt the expungement rules and the governor to sign them and to allow people who've been convicted of things that now are legal to remove their criminal convictions for that. In addition,
what's the appetite for that right now?
Well, there's some. It seems like fixing the roads is sucking up all the air in Lansing.
They can walk and chew gum at the same time.
We would hope so. The other thing, Craig, is that we really only are halfway there. The big kahuna is the federal government, and we don't have a leader in the Michigan delegation of the Congress and the senators who's willing to carry the ball for Michigan to try to whip the rest of the House and the Senate into shape, and that needs to happen. The only reason marijuana is not legal in the United States is because the United States Congress won't do it. And I'm really happy with voters, not politicians. Once we change the gerrymandering, we should get a more representative democracy. As I've said to people, if we had a more representative democracy, marijuana would have been legal years ago. And it's just been unfairly prohibited. So once we get adequate representation, I think that'll solve a lot of issues.
Well, that's a tough one. That's not always the easiest thing to do because they're fighting that tooth and nail.
Yeah, they are. But I'm optimistic. I think, we see progress. It's slow progress, but it is steady progress. And while there were people who said, unless you repeal all the laws, legalization isn't going to make any difference, I think they've seen that legalization in this form is making a huge difference.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it right there. Matt Abel, we appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig.
Matt Abel, founder and lead counsel at Cannabis Council in the city of Detroit, joining us on the program. Hey, thanks for checking out the show today. Don't forget, you can catch me anyway. A lot of different ways to find me. Send me an email, thecraigfolleyshow@gmail.com. You can always find me on social media. Leave me messages there. And again, if you like what I am doing, make sure you subscribe, share, download it each day. And I try to make these about the right length for your typical commute. That's the goal each and every day. Most of you probably listening in your car, looking at some of the data, it's like 90% on mobile these days. It's ridiculous how many people are listening and watching on their phones, and try to make it as digestible as possible for you. If you've got ideas for topics that you want me to touch on, feel free to let me know. There's a lot of different stuff that we could talk about there. Don't forget, if you are listening to this on Tuesday, the State of the City address is taking place tonight. Mayor Duggan getting ready to deliver his annual address. We are expecting him to announce maybe some rules for legalized marijuana in the state or in the city of Detroit. He mentioned yesterday, as a matter of fact, that he's looking to set aside 50% of the licenses for Detroit residents. So it'll be interesting to see how they get to that level. That's something that people have been asking about, is Detroiters' participation in the industry. So that's something to listen to. Also, he's going to be talking about jobs and job creation. So we'll follow up on that tomorrow. We'll take a look at it tonight, see what he has to say, and get some thoughts on that for tomorrow's show. So looking forward to that. Hey, thanks for listening today, and we will talk again soon, I promise. The Craig Folley Show is made possible in part by Deadline Detroit. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in the city. We're asking you to support independent local journalism by joining our $3 a month membership. By joining, you become eligible to win prizes, including tickets for sporting events and gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Just go to our website and click the ad at the top, or go to www.deadlinedetroit.com/membership.